Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to JavaScript Jam Live, open mic, y'all. Yeah. We've got Anthony and Ishan joining us here today. Let's bring them on up. There we go. And there we go. All right, invites sent, y'all. We got Sabin the World down there. Joining us, hanging out. Yes, sir. How's the world of engineering doing?
That's how the world's doing. The world is doing train sound.
Nice.
I don't really know what any of these sounds do except the applause, so I'm going to try a new one each week, and then at the end, I'll have at least a second sound that I can use.
Where are you guys seeing this? I don't see this in...
You don't know how to do sounds and spaces,
no,
Ishan?
No, I
don't. So, it's the magic wand symbol, obviously.
Oh, there it is. Oh, the
and
sound
then board. Hit the applause one. That one's solid. There you go. But if you pull that one out at the right time, it's very good. All the rest, terrible. Awkward, kills the mood, don't hit any other button on there. Except the fart one.
So what's the voice transformer?
I have no idea.
Oh,
we lost Scott.
Suddenly my AirPod stopped working. Oh no, we lost Scott.
Maybe that's for like people if they want to like not be like thrown on like an alt, maybe that doesn't have their real name associated with it. Maybe that's why.
Oh, interesting. Look at this. We've been doing this. I think we've been doing this for more than 2 years, 3 years, maybe back to. We're trying to figure out how long we've been doing JavaScript Jam, and it's at least 2 years, if not 3 years, I think. Although before it was on Clubhouse, and it was actually on Thursdays instead of Wednesdays, and it was called JavaScript Thursdays. But it's been a long while, and I'm still discovering things new. Always more to learn. Well, welcome everyone. Looks like we got Scott back. There he is. To JavaScript Jam Live. JavaScript Jam Live is, we like to call it an open mic. So it is anything JavaScript or web development related is on topic. Sometimes we have guests, sometimes we don't. Next week we'll be off, but the week after that we've got a couple guests lined up for you. Looking forward to bringing them to bring their insights and conversation. But it's designed to also be on some weeks an open mic, so people can just raise their hand. We often talk about a variety of topics in web development, and we send out a newsletter every week that's kind of like gets the juices going for what to talk about that Anthony puts together. And if you want to see that newsletter, go to javascriptjam.com and click on newsletter. And it sounds like Scott's having internet issues.
Yeah, you got your sounds on still. Also,
I do have my sounds on.
So we can
on. Old,
hear
old
your notifications, which is really just us messaging you.
Yeah, exactly. If you aren't a subscriber to the JavaScript Jam newsletter, highly encourage you guys to read it. Anthony does a great job putting together a bunch of resources from on the web about what's new and noteworthy in web development and JavaScript. So just go over to javascriptjam.com and you can see the newsletter link and sign up right there. And maybe you
I'm
can toss
it
up on
to the Jumbotron right
to the
now.
Jumbotron.
Yeah.
There we go. So with that, that's your invitation to, you know, raise your hand at any time. You see it at the bottom of your spaces interface. And we're happy to bring anyone up onto the stage and talk about whatever is interesting or noteworthy. And I want to just add, if you're a beginner or an expert, we want to hear from you. We have lots of advanced conversations, but we have lots of conversations that are people just trying to get started. In fact, you know, very often we had people asking, you know, how do I improve or get to the next step in my career? I'm just starting with HTML and I want to get started with web applications. Should I learn React? Should I learn vanilla.js? That was a topic I think we just had last week or 2 weeks ago. So always happy to help anybody at any level of the spectrum. So with that said, Anthony, do you want to lead with what your story of the week was for the newsletter this week?
Yeah. Story of the week is Chrome 118 beta. This is the type of thing that in the past I probably wouldn't have paid a whole lot of attention to, but I guess I'd be curious asking you, like, how often are major Chrome releases like actually important or a big deal or worth paying attention to? Because if there's 118, seems like a lot, but also
yeah.
There's like a whole, there's a very long blog post, like 18 new features they've added. So, like, what's your read on, like, is this something that's actually worth paying attention to, or is it kind of like just there's always going to be new updates and this is only for like the super duper hyper niche browser fan people?
I here's my answer, which is it depends who you are. Certain features are really important to other, like, browsers have such a wide surface area of people they support, and the most important thing I think is for most developers, it's like, you know, Chrome tends to be one of these browsers that is on the bleeding edge of new features and is actively working. And then there are other browser vendors who are kind of slower. So I bucket it. Like, first I look at some features and I say, well, this is an example of something on the bleeding edge. Will I really bother using it? No, not until, you know, Firefox and Safari support it. So then it's like, okay, let me look and see. And I got to wait a couple years, right? A good example was Web Push, where you had to wait more than a couple years. There are certain other features, like some CSS features that, to be fair, WebKit actually pushes some of those faster than, you know, Chrome does. And because of, I think, Apple's really strong design sense, I personally pay attention to more of the JavaScript stuff since I'm less of a designer. But for me, it's just like, I look at them like, oh, that's interesting. It's a peek at the future, but am I actually going to use it? Probably not. Occasionally something comes out that gets me super excited. But you know, I still wouldn't use it. Like, a good example though is like the Vue Transition API. That was one. And before that it was Portals, that really points to what like a future web browsing experience might look like. But again,
dude, Chris was obsessed with Portals when Portals came out. He was trying to explain it to me. And I'm like, so it's like a really fancy iframe was kind of my take on it at the time.
Yeah. I think I bucket Portals and Vue Transition API as like, you don't have to pay attention to Portals now. And that's a good example why you shouldn't get too wrapped up in it. It didn't seem to take with the rest of the browser ecosystem. It's a good example of like, great idea. And then it got, you know, transformed or, you know, evolved into the Vue Transition API. But the central problem...
It transitioned.
Thank you. I totally missed that. Is that, you know, I look at it as a peek into the future at how people are trying to solve these problems. But I look at things like, you know, I go to make use, can I use, right? And see if it's broadly supported. And there's like a few things that I'm always eagerly looking to see whether they're there. And that's kind of my first take on like looking at what's in the beta. It's always like, oh, this is interesting. But can you actually use it? Unless like you've got a specific use case and you've got, you know, given Chrome's market share, like it's highly likely, like if you've got a specific use case that isn't working for somebody and you'd like to enable it, like push notifications is a good one. Yeah. Then that makes sense.
Something that somewhat significant to me is, have you heard of the privacy sandbox?
I was about to get to that. There's a whole another dimension, which is not just for developers, which is the disappearance of like the phasing out of cookies and how Chrome and all the different browsers are managing that. And that's the thing I think is definitely worth everyone paying attention to, even non-developers, in terms of how they're going to evolve the web ecosystem into a cookie-less world.
Made me realize I don't know anything about this, Eric. It lists 4 APIs: the attribution reporting, protected audience, topics. Oh, it's 5. I'm actually private aggregation and shared storage. I don't know what any of these APIs are. Apparently, there's this whole suite of these APIs that are underlying this privacy sandbox thing.
Yeah, and to be honest, I haven't been up on it, and I tell people they should be, so I'm a bit of a hypocrite. but they used to have a precursor to this called FLoC, Federated Learning of Cohorts. And the idea was that instead of, cookies, well, the central problem, right, that needs to be solved here is, if you get rid of cookies, how can advertisers track users? How can advertisers get advertisements that are targeted to the people that are potentially interested in their product? So I'm not going to define in terms of tracking, but imagine you have a new product and you want to get it out to people. And I don't know, Marvel bobbleheads, right? And you're like, how do I find these people? Well, right now, the way you find those people is they've been on sites that maybe were about Marvel movies or about comics, or they like actually, like, there's a variety of sites where they might go to. And then, the tracking basically indicates that. And then if you can target against that, you can say, serve these ads to those people. Or maybe it's based on their age if you're on Facebook, or if they say they like, or they're part of certain groups on like Facebook. So the central problem, right, that advertising is trying to solve is, how do I put the offering of my product, the people who should be interested in it? And, advertisers aren't interested in putting it in front of people who aren't interested, right? So they don't want everyone. They just want, they want to hopefully get like 100% click-through rate, and not have to show it to anybody and pay for clicks that aren't going to result in sales. So they want to be as targeted as possible. And if you don't have cookies to kind of correlate somebody's interests and actions across a variety of, sites, what is the alternative? And so the idea that they came up with was this idea that in FLoC was that the browser was actually going to store all this data. Rather than Google storing, what you're interested in, basically the browsers would...
So make it client-side instead of server-side. Side,
and they would figure out the things and topics you're interested in. And I believe there was some AI component, if I recall correctly, that was going to decide amongst the browsers or something like that. But it didn't get any traction and pick up. A lot of the advertising industry.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard about it.
Yeah, it died about, let's Google. FLoC, Google. I think it died last year. January 25th, 2022. Google kills off FLoC and replaces it with Topics. So Topics is the new proposal. But again, the idea is very similar. Your browser learns about your interests as you move about the web. It keeps, up to date for a couple weeks on what your browsing history is. And it restricts it to a certain number of topics. I think according to this proposal, it was like 300. And it needs to make sure that doesn't include sensitive topics. And I think it's the protected API is about. So like you don't want to target on anything that might be a protected, class like gender or race, for example. That's basically what this new privacy sandbox is about. It's how do we create a efficient advertising platform that still respects people's privacy. That's the goal. Now, after FLoC died, I was like, okay, I'll wait till, like I talked about the browsers. It's like, let me wait to really pay attention until multiple browsers support it. I haven't really paid attention to Privacy Sandbox. Looks like we have somebody coming up. Oh, looks like that was Scott.
Yeah, I'm going to just throw out a bunch of advice to everybody though, because most of the crowd right now are people who usually talk.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I just threw an invite to everyone in the audience. Oh, you just threw all people. They're all people who previously have spoken here, so it's silly for them all to just sit there listening.
Yeah.
So, come engage. Engage with us, guys.
Yeah, so when you hit upon a site, the way this API is supposed to work, as far as I understand it, is the browser shares the topics you're interested in randomly from your, top topics, and then the site can share that I have a user who's interested in one of these things, and will send to their advertising. So let me back up. So you've got maybe some 300 topics you're interested in, and the browser will rank them, and then when you browse the site, it will pick randomly some subset of those topics that it will share to the website. And then the website says, oh, I've got somebody who's interested in Marvel, you know, F1 racing and AI, right? And then you can go to your advertiser and your advertising platform and say, I've got a user with these three interests. What ads do you have? And I don't know if this is part of Topics, but Flock used to have this thing where it would actually even randomly lie in order to prevent, you know, a bunch of, you know, attacks.
That's funny.
Yeah.
We should do a reset right now. Also, I just want to say, every time we say Flock, all I can think of is Waka Flocka. I don't know if you have any idea who Waka Flocka is.
I have no idea. I'm so out of touch.
He's a rapper. So I just say, Waka Flocka. That makes me think anyway,
of Scott. Bear.
This happened when we were doing work on security, and I kept talking about web application protection as WAP, and people were like, there's this Cardi B song or some rapper song.
That's a much worse connotation. Okay. You don't want that. Yeah, okay. No, you don't go there.
Okay, so I won't go there. So, but anyways, that's the Topics API. And so the reason going back to like, people should pay attention to this is cookies and privacy is something that affects everyone. Obviously it's a controversial and very focused topic. So that's probably the really significant thing here that folks should pay attention to and is really big, in the release.
Sweet.
That being said, I don't know what the adoption is going to be for this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Scott, you want to reset the room and then introduce some of our new speakers here? Are you functional right now, Scott? Otherwise, I can do. We got Bro Nifty, yeah. Jason, Eric. Thank you for jumping up. How you guys doing?
Squad. What's up? I don't really have much to say. I just came up just to show some support here.
Awesome. Eric, what's up, man?
Hey, man. I'm in the Frankfurt airport about to board a flight back to Spain. On my way back from some
airport spacing. I've done a lot of that.
Nice.
Yes, on my way back from a conference in Croatia. So
really, what was that like?
It's lovely. It's my third time going there, and the organizers do a really good job. It's called InfoBip Shift. And it was amazing. I 2-day conference with lots and lots of speakers. Like this morning I had breakfast with the co-founder of Netlify, not to flex or anything, but that was pretty cool.
Christian?
Yes.
Nice.
Who was super cool, and like we sat and talked for like an hour. That was awesome. Anyway, I'm about to get on my flight that was delayed, and I saw you guys were online, so I tuned in, but don't expect a lot of content from me because I'm about to go into airplane mode.
Good stuff. Thanks for joining.
Yeah. What's the most mind-blowing, interesting thing you saw at the conference or you heard?
That's easy. Mind-blowing, my mind was not strong enough to be blown. That was by Sean Wang, Swix.
Okay.
He has this understanding of what AI is going to be.
Small AI. Size talk.
His slides were like you need to stop and do like 30 minutes of research to understand each one of his slides, because he was just giving us this brain dump of his knowledge in this space, and just how crazy things are going to be. But like, it was way over my head.
Was this software 3.0 in the AI engineer landscape? Is that the talk?
That's the one. Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. If people have been listening to his podcast, this is going to be like a condensed version of probably the last 6 months of his podcast, which is absolutely top notch.
Yeah, I really need to look into that. I haven't been listening to that, but he's like, yeah, I've got this podcast where I talk about all this stuff all the time.
Yeah, yeah, late yeah, place, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good podcast.
Very high signal to noise ratio.
It was just like mainlining signal on his in his talk. So that's by far the most interesting talk. But anyway, I'll let you guys investigate that on your own.
Anthony, could you drop a link to that podcast?
Yeah, I'm doing it right now.
Awesome.
I'm doing both the talk and the podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
I think Karpathy called it software 2.0.
That was like in the past where kind of pure ML learning, whereas what he's talking about is kind of now these models are built. How do you integrate them into like a regular engineer's kind of workflow is kind of his whole thing, which I think is really interesting because it creates a new niche of developer, like an AI engineers is what he's like branding it. And I think it's very, very smart.
Agent developer, basically.
Well, here's a good point that there's a gap between having an LLM and having a product, which is, you know, this AI engineer. And he's got a conference, I think, coming up in October. Called the AI Engineer Conference, also worth checking out. The other podcast I'd say that I think does a good sum up is AI Breakdown as well, while we're on the topic. But I did not know he has a new talk on it, so I will go check that out as well. But the last recent one they had was like on an alternative architecture to Transformers, which was really pretty fascinating. RWKV, which I thought was a really good talk. It was also interesting because he switches accents in the talk, in the podcast as a host. And he calls it out explicitly. I don't know if you listened to that podcast episode. I thought it was really fascinating. I'd never considered that. You know, he's whether you're being conscious or not about which accent you're using for which audience. So anyways, it was fascinating in multiple dimensions as an episode.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm linking that podcast as well on the Jumbotron. Sweet.
Okay, we have, I think we have Jason as well, right?
We do.
I'm here. I'm in the car and the signal is not great, so I will do my best to contribute.
Nice. Scott, are you functional?
I'm out here trying to function.
Conjunction, what's your function? Co-host Scott Steinlage.
Oh my gosh. I'm here. Yes, I'm functioning now. It was quite the journey. Having fiber being run through the subdivision and they're drilling. And so I feel like the drilling, at least this is my experience, has been interfering with my current provider and connection. But that's okay because I plan to switch over to the fiber when they're done with it. So, and guess what? They just announced that they're going to be doing 2 gig and not just 1 gig. And I'm like, what? That's incredible.
Dubs gigs?
Yeah, dude. I was just like, wow, that's going to be cool. So excited for that. You know, just the...
I once had a buddy who his dad got sold fiber and they basically just inserted like fiber in between two normal internet connections. So it wasn't actually fiber.
Yeah, I've heard of that too.
And that always stuck with me. And I always thought that was funny. I'm like, huh. Yeah. How much of fiber is actually a scam?
AT&T is doing that. I've seen it. Well, my own mother, she's like, oh, they got fiber. I'm like, okay, what's your speed? And she just told me it was like basically like a normal, you know, like 200 meg or something. And I'm like, okay. You know, I know you can get fiber that's 200 or whatever. But the point was, is that she did not have speeds that were the same up and down, right? Which is what fiber would do for you. I mean, obviously they can throttle it all they want. They can do whatever they want. But typically, you know, if you have a gig, you have a gig up and a gig down or whatever it might be. So anyway, but yeah, I'm excited to actually, they are running fiber through here and not hooking up to, you know, they go back to, actually they're,
getting that real fiber straight from the source.
They partner with a larger company that has what do you call it, dark fiber or black fiber? Yeah, dark fiber, which is like a huge.
I've never heard of that.
A massive pipeline, essentially, of fiber.
So you're saying that it's a series of tubes, the internet. It's a series of tubes, is what you're saying? That's what it is?
I don't know if I'm saying that, but.
Sounds like that's what you're saying.
I guess. Anyway, so yeah, fiber is actually glass, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Or
glass can be, tubes can be glass. They're glass tubes.
Yeah.
Series of glass tubes.
Yep. So
anyway, we should get back to the topics at hand.
I guess so.
Yeah. You guys are giving me a chance to eat some of my lunch. so I'm like, I'm trying to like get us decide, like, do I want another bite to eat or do I want to get back on
let's track? Talk about how WordPress is gonna last a thousand years. Let's talk about that.
No, dinosaurs.
A millennium of WordPress.
It's 100 years. A millennium at the current rate would be.
See, but they're saying you can renew. If you can renew your 100-year plan, why can't you renew it 10 times?
Okay, let's. I was going to talk about React server components and go to that and Remix versus Redwood, but let's go on with that one. So we were talking about this one before. So for context, WordPress announced a 100-year hosting plan.
Woohoo!
It is $38,000. And they guarantee that they will host your site for the next 100 years. And then at the my favorite part is at the very end, they're like, we hope you renew. but you know, it as this is actually, I have to give them a lot of credit. Here's why it's interesting and important. You know, it gets people thinking about building for the long term. Like, there's this organization in San Francisco called The Long Now. They tried to build an accurate clock, I think, that's supposed to run 10,000 years. There's, you know, so much of web history that, you know, is ephemeral, and we take it for granted. Whether it's our tweets, whether it's, you know, certain blog posts, we think they'll live forever, and they don't. I mean, this is why archive.org exists. And, you know, it's $38,000. But if you divide that over, you know, 100 years and then divide it by 12 months, you're talking about $30 a month, not exorbitant. And the way they're targeting it is, you know, crafting a legacy. So it's not for everyone, but it's an investment, you know, whether it's for, you know, a gift for a loved one to celebrate, they said, a birth, or for family offices or things like that. Like, basically, families who wish to preserve digital assets, founders who want to protect the past, present, and future, or individuals seeking a stable, flexible, and customized online home that they know will be able to adapt to whatever changes technology brings. But I think it's really important to start thinking about, wow, you know, I don't know the last time I looked at a SaaS product that says, yes, we have a 100-year plan. It's a real commitment to thinking long-term and future-wise. And I also thought it was a really interesting angle. Like, if you look at the video, it's like, it's about, you know, celebrating or crafting a legacy. And it reminded me of the Patek Philippe, you know, those watches that they advertise at the back of the Economist magazine. And they have that line, you know, you don't really own one.
Can't say I'm familiar with any of the things you're talking about right now.
Okay, it's a super fancy high-end watch. And the saying on it is, you don't actually own a Patek Philippe. You merely take care of it for the next generation. And that's got some adult with their kid, you know, doing something together, right?
But I want mine, Ishan. I want my things to be mine. I don't want it to be the next generation. Screw the next generation.
Well, the next generation is going to put it through AI, and it'll be probably 11 live. They'll have your voice and your likeness. So, anyways, that was the 100-year WordPress plan. I thought that was very interesting, and
people aren't used to it. I like the idea because, you know, with GitHub, you can actually say if when you're deceased, who your GitHub will like transfer to. And so I kind of like this. It does put you in a different kind of mindset of like what are you creating, and is it meant just for right now, or is it meant to like last long term? And so I do like that idea. This is actually one of the reasons that Redwood is called Redwood, is that it's like a framework that was meant for the long term, like a giant tree that lives 1,000 years.
Oh, I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
Part of me has me thinking about the poor accountants and the revenue recognition on that 100-year plan. It's like, how do the accountants and the deal with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Ethan and I were talking about that too. Yeah. Like, did they get actuaries involved?
Well, you know, the cost of computing and storage eventually is going to go down. Yo, go ahead.
Jason's internet is failing him.
Yeah. Well, he said he was driving. But go ahead. Let's see if we can get Jason in here.
No, I muted him for now.
Okay. But yeah, it's, and you know, this used to be a thing, you know, back, if you did computing in the 486 Pentium days or 386, you're building products trying to project what the capabilities of systems would be. Here it's like, well, what do you think the cost of computing is going to trend to, or storage will trend to for, you know, on a 100-year time scale? Would be really interesting. But you know, one question is really easily answered, is what is the customer lifetime value? So that part of your SaaS metrics is set, unless you're counting on them to renew. Maybe if we get Jason back, we can go back to that. It looks like we're at the halfway point. Maybe Scott, you can do the station break, and we'll see if anybody has anything else. Otherwise, we can move to the React server components.
Yeah, thank y'all so much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate everybody in here who's come up on stage, anybody who's out there listening in the audience, greatly appreciate it. Just remember, whether you're a beginner at this, whether you're an advanced developer, it doesn't matter. We want to hear from everybody. So feel free to raise your hand, and we will, or request, I guess. Click on request. We'll bring you up on the stage. You can ask whatever questions you want, state facts, opinions. It doesn't matter. We'd love to hear from you. In fact, actually, that's when some really great conversations happen, is when people come up and contribute and just have some fun with us hanging out. So would love to hear from y'all if you want to hang with us. Don't forget, we do this every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, except for, is it next Wednesday?
Yes, next week. Yes, JS Jam.
Yeah,
there you go. Next week, no JS Jam, but the following week we will be.
Because I'll be in Italy,
and Anthony will be in Italy. Yes, so that'll be cool.
Eating food,
sure,
and staring at very, very old rocks,
and lots of food.
Extremely old rocks.
Food, wine, and dine, and rocks. It'll be good. Yeah, man. Really love to hear from it when you get back. Absolutely. It's going to be good. Awesome. I don't know. Real quick, actually, I just want to say, not to change the subject too much, but who was super surprised when Nicky T left his job recently?
Ooh, at NetLify. Yeah,
and now he's at OpenSauce as of yesterday, I think.
I
missed that.
I had talked to him last time we were at a conference together, so I wasn't surprised, but I had inside information. And he didn't like tell me like, hey, I'm leaving Netlify. So much as like, you know, just conversation about career and stuff, and seemed like he was open to other opportunities at the time. And a lot of people he's close with are already working at OpenSauce. People like Becca, who I think H-Dub. I'm not sure if she is full-time or still contracting with them.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she's full-time.
But, she's been involved for a while. And you got Brandon, from Angular and Analog. He works there. He was one of the first employees. And yeah, OpenSauce is just, it's a cool project.
Well, Brian himself.
And then Brian, obviously, yeah, the founder. And we actually have an episode set to go out about OpenSauce, to where he'll be showing off some of the new AI capabilities, which is very exciting.
Yeah. How many people is OpenSauce now? I didn't realize.
Probably about half a dozen like full-time employees now, with a couple kind of like peripheral people doing some contracting and some other people contributing open source stuff. So yeah, it's got a pretty good center of people and a lot of people who Bryant has known for a while and are just like very visible in this kind of community and work. So yeah, it's great. You know, I've told people that actually open source is the very first Discord I ever joined, because when Brian was first creating this, he was doing it just as a side project while he was working at GitHub, and he's actually been working on this project for like 4 years now. And I had gotten in touch with him through Jamstack Radio to talk about Redwood, and then he was, after the conversation, he was like, hey, you should join this Discord, and he just like sent me a link to it. And then I was also going to his streams. He was streaming while he was kind of building this. And that's how I met like all these people. Nice. And now it's actually a company that he's getting funding for. Yeah. And he's able to quit his job. And now he has employees that he's hired. And it's just like, I've seen this build over like 4 years now. And he's played it very, very smart. And so, they're at a very exciting point now.
As you can tell, Anthony has the deets on everything. So, you know, Nick, Ryan, it doesn't matter. You mentioned somebody. Anthony's got the deets. So, guess who writes our newsletter? Anthony does.
That's on me. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about people and when they're thinking about quitting their jobs in the newsletter, though. Right, so.
We have the latest and greatest inside of our newsletter, JavaScript Jam. So, if you're not already a subscriber, like several hundreds of other people are, go to JavaScriptJam.com and subscribe today. Don't miss out. That's it for me.
Yeah. Okay. Say, so you want to talk about React Server Components, Sean?
No, I changed my mind.
You changed your mind. All right.
I changed my mind.
Well, free flowing. Improv.
Yeah. Improv.
Never say no.
So, you know, the invites went out for Next.js conference. Later this month. So, you know, we can move on to server components, but I'd love to hear from folks in the audience. Again, we're an open mic, so just raise your hand and we're happy to bring you up, whether you're a beginner or an expert. What you think might get announced, or what you would love to see be announced, or what you're looking for from this year's Next.js conference. We actually had last year, one of the people involved in it come on for an episode after the conference, which was really interesting, a friend of the show. So I'd be curious to hear what folks think and what they're interested in. Do you have a sense, or are you hearing anything that you can share, Anthony, on what you think might be in there?
I mean, I've seen some people who have shared that they like submitted talks, and I think if you look at previous years Next.js conf speakers, you'll get a good sense of the type of speakers who will be speaking this year. But I think that you're going to see a wide span of things, because Next is used for a lot of different stuff. I imagine we'll see a pretty heavy subset of AI things. And I kind of had a cheeky little joke in my, because they let you pick a tag and like throw it on your ticket. So I picked about 60 AI tags and covered my entire ticket with it, because that's obviously what I'm most excited for. But I'm sure other topics will be discussed as well. I'm sure some people will talk at length about how they think there's too many AI talks as well, and that's fine. They're welcome to their opinion, but that's what I'll be looking for.
It's the new Bitcoin in that way, in some sense. So I was surprised or interested to see that this public relations company WPP is actually one of the sponsors of one of the titanium sponsors.
Who's that?
WPP. It's
I don't know who that is.
It's a, you, if you Google it, they're a publicly traded company from the UK, basically advertising and public relations. Really large company.
Interesting.
It's not, somebody you'd normally see at developer conferences. So I thought that was interesting.
It's
I don't
very
think
corporate.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's growing up, I suppose. But I don't think they've released the speakers yet.
No, because talks are still, you can submit talks, I think, for another week or so.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Yeah, so if people want to speak at NextConf, now is the time. You can submit a topic, and if you think you've done something cool with the framework or have an interesting take on it, then go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you've got things you wish to see there, or you know, your thoughts on what you expect will be there, feel free to raise your hand. We'll bring you up to the stage. With that, you know, again, before I get to React Server Components, you also had in the newsletter this week a one more thing about Astro moving to Nitro from the Nux team. Speaking of
no, Solid Start moving to Nitro.
Not Solid. Thank you.
Yeah, Solid Start moving off of Astro to Nitro.
Yes. Okay. Sorry, I got it back. Yes. Yes, you're right. Ryan Graniato from Solid Start, or from Solid, moving Solid Start over to. So why don't you give folks the background on that?
Yeah. So Solid Start is the Solid.js meta framework. Kind of think of it like the next to the React. But Ryan has kind of gone back and forth on how he wants that to actually work. Because he said many times that he never really wanted to make a meta framework. He was always hoping someone else would just kind of make it instead of him. But at a certain point, he kind of had to admit he was going to have to do it. So for a while, he was just creating Solid Start kind of just as like, so following a similar architecture to Remix to a large extent, and then they decided to try and use Astro as like the underlying thing. But when they first announced that, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, because it seemed like Astro had too much other stuff that was gonna like not be related to what he would want to do with Solid Start. And so recently he kind of, I think, realized this and decided to go off of Astro to Nitro, which is the underlying server for Nuxt. So it makes more sense that he's now kind of looking more at Nuxt as an inspiration, how they're using Nitro as the underlying server to do all the extra fancy stuff you need your meta framework to do. So I think that's pretty promising, because it gives him an interesting avenue into a different ecosystem, the Vue ecosystem and the Nuxt ecosystem, which is quite large and substantial, and I think is not very well-trodden path for like React kind of devs. So those worlds tend to stay kind of separate. So I find it interesting that Solid now is kind of taking a step into that world to a large extent.
I think it's interesting that I think this is Nitro's second big, you know, framework that runs on it. Am I correct or incorrect on that?
Well, it was created like by the Nuxt team for Nuxt.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like how Vite was like a Vue thing that just was so good. Exactly. It was eventually picked up by other frameworks. You know, it's a similar type of thing.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm suggesting is like, it's an important milestone for Nitro as it is being something other than just, you know, Nuxt naming the thing that they use. There's actually an ecosystem that seems to be forming around it. It's like a proof of mm-hmm. ecosystem adoption. And I think, you know, what's interesting to me about Nitro is it's got this goal. And, you know, actually, if you go to our YouTube, we have a bunch of videos from a summit we held last year called the Composability Summit. And we had somebody from the Nuxt team speak specifically about Nitro. But the goal is to build, you know, servers that can run anywhere and not just in a node environment. And I think that's really important and interesting, especially as we're evolving towards an edge computing landscape, where these edge runtimes, whether it's ours, you know, at Edgio, or those of, you know, our other peers in the marketplace, very few of them, I don't think any of them, are really running a true node server on the edge, because it's too much overhead. It's usually either a bare V8 engine, or it's some type of WASM container, or it's, you know, really well-defined, you know, JavaScript runtime, like the Nginx runtime. But it's not, you know, a true node server with the full node API, because that's too heavy. And so the ability to have, you know, the flexibility to run in all those environments and not necessarily have to be bound to the node ecosystem, I think is really important for, you know, applications and meta frameworks going forward. So I'm really happy to see, you know, Nitro picking up more things that run on top of it.
Cool. Yeah, I linked that talk, Nuxt and the Composable Web, I believe is the one you're referring to, by Daniel.
Yes.
Yep. And then I also pinned up Chris Griffin in the crowd was talking about Hypertune. I'm not familiar with Hypertune. Apparently it's a feature flag tool. Feature flagging is a deep problem set for sure.
Oh, Chris, I'd love to hear more. Okay. If you want to come up to the stage. I expect to hear a lot about Hypertune HQ. I'm especially interested because I'm making a feature flag tool as well, but theirs seems cool. Would love to hear actually, Chris, about your tool. But this is actually a really important use case for teams, especially as you move up market in the enterprise. I know, you know, it's a capability we have in the platform that a lot of our customers are really excited about. And
looks like we got him up. What's up, Chris?
Day. Oh, Chris. Yeah, come on up.
Hi, everyone. How's it going? Thanks for having me. I only just discovered it within the past couple days, but they have a partnership with Vercel even, and it's really cool. Basically, it's like the official Edge config software that they're using for Vercel, like under the hood, which is kind of crazy to me. So really cool, that partnership for them. And I'm building like an open source feature flag tool, and they check a lot of the boxes that I thought I was unique with. So Hypertune's really kind of cool, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it.
What's the name of your tool?
It's Vexilla. It's just a static file-based feature flag tool. So you could just launch it up to GitHub for like PR review. So you get audit tracking, and then it's hosted on whatever static file server you want to put it on. So it's more about like the client does all of the logic, which is useful for like just bootstrapping and, you know, hobbyists and things like that.
Got it. How do you spell that? You want to put the link in? We'll put it up.
I got it. Vexilla.
Yep. Yeah. So vexilla.dev is like the most recent version being made. I have an older version that's been on GitHub for a bit, but needs much more improvement.
Ah, good. Yeah. I saw the GitHub one. This website looks pretty clean. I will share this.
How did you get into this space of, you know, feature flags and, you know, A/B testing? Like what made you start building this?
So I build a lot of software on stream, and I started looking into a feature flag tool just because, you know, I just have certain services that are used, and I wanted to implement billing and ship it and test it without necessarily releasing it to all my users on various things. And I didn't see any platform that was really like something I could afford to use. LaunchDarkly is notoriously expensive. Right. But nowadays there are other tools like Hypertune.
And then Optimizely is one that I usually hear about the most. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Split.io, Optimizely. There's a couple big players, but now there's actually some affordable ones too, like Growthbook. And like Hypertune has unlimited monthly active users for their free tier, which is kind of cool. Yeah. It's just really interesting. Like the space has grown a lot since I started like building this as a hobby project.
Yeah. What use cases are you primarily seeing people use Vexilla for?
So we're using it at the company I work at right now, Fairwinds, just because it's a really easy thing to opt into. There's no server to maintain. There's no service to sign up for. Yep. It's just a static file-based feature flag tool that, you know, we're using with very little like cost if we decide to go to something else, which is nice.
Got it. Okay. You know, we've mentioned some companies in the space. Maybe we should back up for people who aren't aware. Do you want to explain to folks, or I'm happy to do it, like the why of feature flags and the value they provide?
Sure. Yeah, I actually have a spiel about this. I didn't realize that Next.js is still accepting talks, so I'm about to propose one about feature flags for, you know, just a quick 10-minute talk, but I can totally give the spiel. So basically, feature flags are part of the 12-factor like application stack, right? Or like, you know, just the 12-factor app of like, you need feature flags, testing, different environments, blah, blah, blah. And it makes like a robust application. It's something that's been around for 20 plus years. The interesting thing that feature flags are meant for is to decouple changing logic in your application from your deploy process. So in some organizations, your deploy might take up to, you know, like a week, like you have a weekly deploy. If you're doing a mobile app and you want to change something, you have to deal with like submitting your app to the app store, and it could be up to a week before they finally approve it, because they might not even call out a problem for something you just made. They might notice something that you already had previously, and you got to fix it before it can launch. So instead, if you wanted to turn on like a holiday theme in your mobile app, you could have that shipped out to users in an update, you know, weeks ahead of time, and then just turn it on when you're ready for it and turn it off without having to deal with the deploy process.
Yeah, thank you. I like to sometimes decouple feature flag, like the technology, from the use case. And there's a great chart. Martin Fowler, I don't know if you've read the Martin Fowler article called Feature Toggles. where he talks about, he used the word toggle, mm-hmm. but then he goes through like the different, he calls it the level of dynamism versus the level of longevity. So certain things are just for like a canary deploy. So they have a short time window and a high amount of dynamism. Other things might be A/B testing. So they have a little bit longer amount of longevity that live in the system, but eventually they go away because eventually the A or the B wins and you clean that up. Mm-hmm. And then there are things like permission toggles, which, you know, stay around longer in the code because they might be, oh, only the VIP users get this. That's generally how we've looked at it. So a great example of kind of the canary release is, I love the Facebook username launch example. They wrote a blog post about that, where it's when they launched Facebook usernames, the SRE team was like, we don't know, you know, if the system's going to be able to handle this, all the influx of people signing up for usernames. So they had a bunch of feature flags that they were able to toggle in order to make sure they could handle the load. So this is different than like a canary release. It's more like the ability to modify the system in real time to handle operational requirements.
Mm-hmm. And if it blows up, you can just roll it back, right?
You could, well, not just the feature itself, which was really interesting. So one of the things they outlined was they had the ability to turn off particular features, mm-hmm. like the new item notifications, or they slowed down and configured how often clients refresh the buddy list, or the default number of stories on the home or profile pages. So as they knew things were going bad, they could slowly make tweaks operationally, like take the foot off the gas pedal for various other parts of the system to allow this other feature to go out successfully, in addition to what they called the nuclear option, which is to disable the new feature completely. Mm-hmm. I thought I always reference that as a great case study. It's kind of like really mature use case of feature flags. Like, it's not just that one feature, it's that you've got the operational control over various parts of your system. So if something's going wrong, you can effectively route around the problem. Maybe your PayPal integration suddenly breaks or something like that. You've got a way to kind of bucket that or turn that capability off so that you're not sending people down a dark path in your checkout flow.
Exactly.
Is another example of that.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to hit on the fact that, yes, you mentioned how it was called Toggles by Martin Fowler, and that's just like one small part of like turning it off and on. There's gradual release, which is basically the building block to A/B testing, like you mentioned. But there's also things like rolling out a new payment plan, or, you know, updating a price of something for like a Stripe payment. All of these things can actually be fetched real time rather than having to do a deploy for it, which actually becomes really helpful. You could even do like copy changes and things like that. So very powerful stuff.
Yeah. It's a huge, I guess the big thing is like, it's a huge productivity unlock.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fascinating space. So that's really interesting. It's an interesting prediction. You should definitely submit that talk.
Thank you.
I'll definitely check out Vexilla.
Cool. There's one more thing I wanted to mention. Further, yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead. One more thing I just wanted to mention about feature flags is the hardest part is actually figuring out when you can remove a feature flag from your logic. And there's only one company that I've even seen attempt this, and that's Uber, and they have a tool called Piranha, but it's meant to work with their feature flagging tools. And so far, I'm not seeing Posthog or LaunchDarkly or any of these companies actually implementing a tool to help you clean up your code base afterwards. So I think that's a major place where one of these companies is going to swoop in and make that as easy as possible.
So I agree with that. There's actually another solution, which is if you're doing a multivariate test, it's harder to do. But what you can do is you essentially create a branch for the code. So you don't put the fork in the code itself. You create separate branches and then you run the different branches. So that's something we've got in our platform is we let you run different versions of the code. And then when you know which one works, you can just pick that branch and make that one your main or merge it into your main. And then you're kind of, it fits in your normal code development process. And it's not this, you know, you have to go into the code itself. You can manage whether you tracked, whether that feature flag got removed or not, you know, which branch won or not. And that's another way to approach the same problem. To solving this problem of removal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, cool. I'm gonna have to check out your platform too.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free to DM me.
Yep, sounds good.
So thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for letting me speak.
Anybody else with any Next.js predictions or requests for what they want to see in Next.js coming up? Okay. Well, feel free to raise your hand. Maybe then, Anthony, do you have any hot takes on the fact that Remix, you know, came out with Remix V2 and they said, we're still not doing React server components. We'll wait till it's stable, which was maybe news to people who saw it in Next.js. And I know Redwood is definitely going all in server components, and you're a core member of the Redwood team, and Redwood JS conference is coming up. Do you want to just tell people about that?
Yeah. Next week is going to be Redwood JS Conf, September 26th to 29th. It will be in Oregon. And unfortunately, I will not be able to make it because I will be, as we mentioned earlier, on my honeymoon. But I definitely encourage people to check it out online because there'll be a lot of great talks. And as you said, you know, the headline talk is going to be all in on React server components. So I can't be making more clear of a statement than that. And I think that's really exciting because I've been, you know, interested in React server components for a while, and I always figured Redwood would go this direction. It's just a fairly slow-moving, conservative framework in a lot of ways and how it adopts new React features. But we ended up kind of in the middle, if you think about it, because as you mentioned with Remix, you know, they still haven't adopted it yet. Next has already kind of declared they've gone all in. So we ended up, I think, about in the middle in that respect.
Are you like the Apple of frameworks? Or
Maybe wait just long enough. That first person to die in the sword seemed like, oh, here's actually the better version that everyone actually wanted.
Right.
Ask if you feel like it's React Server Components is an inevitability. Like, is it clear at this point? Like, I think 12 months ago, well, maybe even further back than 12 months ago, because there was the Next.js release 12 months ago that was really heavy on React components. But it seemed like it was, we didn't know whether it was going to be like suspense, which seemed to take forever. It seems like it's picking up steam. More and more frameworks are adopting it. Is it an inevitability? If you haven't been bothering to learn it as a developer, should you get on that train now? Or do you think it's still
I reject that framing entirely because I think it can both be an inevitability and not be something that the developers need to learn because the frameworks are going to kind of put it in there for them. So I think that whatever React builds into core is going to be an inevitability in the sense that unless React decides to go away from React server components, which they can always do, but I think is unlikely, then it's an inevitability because, you know, frameworks, they only have really so much choice here. Like they can kind of fight whatever the underlying library does and try and do something slightly different. But if the underlying library is really like, this is how it's going to work into the future and other frameworks are picking that up, then there's a kind of like inertia that goes along with that. And other frameworks kind of just have to adopt. Like with, you know, when they went from classes to hooks, like if some React framework wanted to be like, no, I really want to keep using classes. It's like, sure, you could do that, but no one's going to really want that.
I guess I would push back. So I agree with that. Like it, in some sense, it's inevitably, I'd push back on your pushback of my framing in that, yes, the frameworks are going to solve this for you, but I feel like you need the conceptual mental model, get used to the conceptual mental model that as a front-end developer, you haven't had to think about for a while, which is...
See, but with Redwood, that's not going to be the case. Like Redwood, you're going to write your Redwood app literally the exact same way, and you're not going to have to think about it. And that's, I mean, to a certain extent, you're going to have to kind of not use as much GraphQL, I think, but it's not like you're going to have to completely relearn the framework itself, but I think that's going to be kind of different from framework to framework. And I think that's probably what Remix would want, but they may not be able to achieve yet. And with Next, they kind of introduce a certain amount of breakage and a certain amount of people need to learn some new things. And you saw that friction kind of play out in real time. Yeah. So we'll see how, you know, with Redwood, it's not really, it's not fully baked yet. So all of this is just speculation at this point, and maybe we won't be able to make it as smooth as I'm hoping we'll be able to do, you know, kind of the jury's still out at this point.
Is it kind of like what Blitz was trying to get to, which was like, you don't have to think about the boundary as much. It just kind of all works together for you under the hood.
Yeah. The idea with any of these opinionated frameworks is that you want there to be kind of layer in between, like with the framework, because with Redwood you have things like cells and you have all this kind of like built-in stuff of how you think about how you do your data fetching and how you connect to your database. And so that is the type of thing that can kind of exist and have the underlying framework thing, which would be React Server Compose, happening underneath it. So that's kind of like the goal, and we'll see how much that actually ends up being true or not, I guess.
Okay. Well, then, if you get a chance, folks, tune in to the Redwood JS conference next week. I would actually, except I have a I have another conflict, but it sounds like it'll be really intriguing. I'm curious to see what they come up with.
And I should say, more also, in addition to the React Server Compose stuff, it's actually being billed as conference for builders, because really what Redwood's all about is actually like enabling companies to build apps with users that ship products. And that's really like the most important thing. So that's why it's been many years where we have kind of pushed back on adopting the hot new React, whatever, whether it was React Server Components. And now we've decided that it's the time to flip the switch on that. But the overlying emphasis is still on, like, this is something that is meant to make you productive, not getting you mired in React minutiae.
Interesting. Okay. Well, on that note, we're effectively at time. Scott, do you want to take us out?
Take me out to the ball game. Okay, no. Yeah, thank you all so much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it. As always, we are here every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, except for next week. So be sure to come hang out with us in 2 weeks. It's going to be fun. Yeah. By the way, if you got any value from anybody that was up here on stage, please feel free to follow them as well, because if you got value from them here, you're probably going to get value from them in other places too. Or maybe you just found them interesting. Yeah, give them a follow. Obviously, we wouldn't mind a follow too on JavaScript Jam. And like I said before, if you haven't already subscribed to our newsletter, JavaScriptJam.com, and you want to know all the wonderful things that are coming up for every Wednesday that we're going to be discussing and talking about, and just some other cool things on there that we may not touch on during Wednesdays, go to JavaScriptJam.com, subscribe to our newsletter with the other hundreds of people that are already there. Yeah, don't miss out. All right. Thanks, y'all, so much for joining us, and we'll see you in the next one.
In the next one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, y'all. Love you. See you in the next one.